It is my joy to have in the studio with me my thoroughly Jewish friend, Scott Volk. We're together on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, this is Michael Brown. It is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. And when you next hear from me, I should be in Israel. We've got a really special time of ministry in Israel, ministering in some key Messianic congregations, doing a seminar for seven Messianic congregations, at least on answering Jewish objections to Yeshua, then doing some key teaching and ministry time with Christian leaders of the younger generation that have come into Israel from different parts of the world specifically to understand God's purposes, God's plan for Israel, and why it matters, why the church standing with Israel really is so important. I won't be taking calls today. I'm going to spend this time with my friend Scott Volk. But Scott, always a joy to hang out with you.
Such a privilege, bro. Thanks so much for having me on again.
And we've been friends since 1993.
1993, when both of us were way younger.
Yeah, wait, I feel probably younger today than I did then. And we both had more hair. I still have more hair than you, but I've gotten to the point I don't boast about it, make fun of you anymore. What was your disposition when we first met? If I talked to you about Jewish ministry or a Messianic Jewish congregation or having a burden for Israel, what would your response have been?
Probably foreign. I would have told you to tell me something that's a little bit more relevant to me and to my family. I was ambivalent, naive, really blinded with regard to, I think, God's heart for Israel. Jewish ministry was nothing that I wanted to have anything to do with. I considered myself a church guy, pastoring in a local church. The feasts meant nothing to me. It's kind of crazy being born into a Jewish family. I wanted nothing to do with Jewish ministry.
Yeah, so your parents obviously put the greatest emphasis on knowing Jesus, and you were raised to have a spiritual mentality, spiritual outlook, but it's almost as if spirituality took you away from Jewishness somehow.
I think you're right. My parents didn't discourage me where Jewish ministry was concerned, certainly, but for me, it just wasn't a relevant thing. As a young believer in Yeshua, I was blinded to the reality of it.
And then when you meet Beth and you marry Beth and she's Lebanese descent and Arab, were you thinking to yourself, look at the prophetic significance of this, a Jew and an Arab? I mean, obviously you loved each other, want to spend the rest of your lives together. Did you have any sense about that?
No, it was the furthest thing from my mind. But people would tell me how cool it was that a Jew and an Arab were coming together, that my children had a little bit of Isaac and a little bit of Ishmael in them. But to me, it meant absolutely nothing.
And probably the most interesting thing is you were leading tours to Israel,
yeah,
and people were being impacted, and you knew on a certain level the importance of it, but you still didn't get it.
No, I didn't get it. In 2005, I think we started leading tours to Israel.
But and why did you do that? Why did you start leading tours?
Well, being here at Fire, having young people here, I thought it would be a great idea to start bringing people over and letting them get familiar with the land of the Bible, where Jesus walked. So it was kind of an innocent thing, certainly.
That is so amazing. And then at a certain point, and it coincides with the birth of another child.
Yeah.
How old were your older children when you found out that you're going to have another child?
My youngest child at that time was 14. So I had a 14, a 16, a 17, and an 18-year-old when Beth told me that she thought she was pregnant.
And in point of fact, Beth being an avid homeschooler, one of the finest homeschoolers you could meet as a teacher herself, so she knows she's just about done. There's a 14-year-old, others are done, just about done. And it was right about the same time with the birth of a new child that God birthed this heart for Israel and the Jewish people. All right, friends, we come back. I want to talk personally with Scott, take you behind the scenes a little bit, give you an understanding of why we believe it's so important for the church to have a heart for the Jewish people, in particular, the lost sheep of the house of Israel.
want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, you hear that music, you know it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. This is Michael Brown. I'm blessed to be sitting here with my friend of many, many years, co-worker Scott Volk. Boy, it's been amazing. Our leadership team working closely together. We've been together like 18 years
now.
And through thick and thin, oftentimes without pay for the team and pressure and things. But God really called us together. And you've always been a team player. That's something that's blessed me deeply. I remember when we were in Pensacola, we were praying about relocating, and we felt we were to be moving. And we went around the room to each one. Okay, do you agree? Do you feel that this is what God's saying to us? I was the team leader, but we're trying to hear the Lord together. And it came to you, and you said, there's nothing to pray about. If that's what God's speaking to the team, I'm going. Part of the team. And yet God's really raised you up with a ministry together for Israel, where you've been able to lead and touch many, many lives. But let's just go back to this time in your life when you and Beth found out you're going to have a baby. I know it's Thoroughly Jewish Thursday, but I think this is going to really minister to people about life and pro-life issues. Okay. Yeah. It was a Saturday. I was teaching a big seminar in the city. You were scheduled to go with me. And you said, Mike, something's come up. Something really heavy has come up. And I can't go, okay, something's going on. All right. Everything all right? Yeah, okay, fine. Then Sunday morning, my phone wasn't turned on, my cell phone. When I get up to go to the church service, I'm just going to get there right on time, you know, speaking that Sunday. And I see there's a voicemail. Could you and Beth talk to Nancy and me a few minutes before the service? Well, it's too late at this point. So Nancy said, we've got to get hold of him immediately, find out what's going on. And you say, after the service, you come over to our house. And you come over with three of your four kids. And everybody's laughing. It's like, right, something here is not right. You got some heavy thing going on in your life and your family. You got to talk to us immediately. You got your kids there, too, and everybody's laughing. So it was the announcement that Beth was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
When you and Beth first heard the news that she was pregnant, what were your responses?
Well, when most people hear that I have a 25, 24, 22, 21, and a five-year-old, they start laughing. And then I typically would say, I don't know why all of you are laughing, because the first thing that happened to us is we were crying. I mean, we were literally crying. We felt like we had our season of raising children. Our youngest at that time was 14.
And you're total family. I mean, you were absolute family people.
Loved our kids. But we were, Beth and I were planning just this new season of life where she would be able to travel with me. She'd finally done homeschooling or getting to the end. And then we get really what I call a curveball from heaven. It was like, Lord, how can this be happening? Why are you doing this? And again, it's not that we didn't love children. We just felt like that season was over. But it's so interesting how the Lord, in conjunction with this new life that was not planned at all, as a matter of fact, it was close to impossible for it to happen. But for this to happen, and then in conjunction with God kind of birthing a heart for Israel inside of me, I don't think it's at all coincidental. Now, obviously, my youngest is now 5.5 years old. She was just the flower girl in her older sister's wedding this last weekend. And I have, not only do I not have any regrets, I wish I had five more.
Yeah, and that's another subject we can talk about another day. But when Beth basically asked you, is it okay that she could just let her emotions out?
Yeah.
And do you remember that?
Oh, yeah. Well, we were in the bathroom and we saw the stick go positive. Beth looked at me. She goes, I can either think only happy thoughts and tell you those things, or I could tell you how I'm really feeling. And I said, well, honey, why don't you just be honest with me? And then we both were crying because our plans for our life were disrupted.
Yep.
But now looking back, it was so ordained by the Lord. I would do it over again 100 out of 100 times.
And you've also told me that it changed your whole life having to be home every night with a little baby, with a little child that you were raising, and it's for the best.
It's for the best. I would sit at home. You know, our life was so busy, and we were constantly doing things in the evenings that there were times when Beth and I would be on the couch just together because we had a little one at home. And it was really a time of, not that our family was in bad shape, but just more of a focusing in on our life together as a family. It was so wonderfully refoundational for us. I wouldn't trade it for the world.
And of course, because Beth is now in her 40s and is going to have a child, the doctors want to test for Down syndrome in particular.
Yeah.
And because 90%, maybe more, babies that are spotted with Down syndrome get aborted. I mean, it's this absolutely horrific thing. What was Beth's response to that?
Well, Beth, first of all, she refused the tests because it wouldn't have mattered to her if the doctors had diagnosed anything. We knew that God planted this life inside of her for a deeper purpose. So that wasn't even a thought for her. She didn't even entertain the thoughts. And the doctors were putting a little bit of pressure on her. She was in the latter part of her 44th year when she actually gave birth. I'm so proud of my wife. Not one bit of medicine at all. Not because it's bad for medicine, but she's just a tough chick. And she gave birth to all five of our kids the same way.
Aren't you glad that you didn't have to give birth?
Yeah, they say opposites attract. And trust me, I would have gone for the medicine like a day before I went into labor.
I believe that. Having worked out with you, I believe that. Hey, listen, I'm glad it was my wife. And that's why God chose women.
That's why God chose women.
So you have this new birth, and then this calling to Israel, it's changed your life completely. I mean, you were basically planning on being a lead pastor.
Yeah.
You're pastoral, as much of a pastoral guy as anyone I know. You're a community builder.
Yeah.
You love being there and being in one place, and now you're traveling around the world, and now you're leading frequent tours to Israel and people just being deeply impacted. So it's important people hear this. And they realize it's not just because you're Jewish or your parents are Jewish, because that was not who you were.
Right.
And in fact, and I never realized it when you'd say I'm of Jewish descent or my parents are Jewish, you were saying it because you didn't want to say I'm Jewish.
That's exactly right, bro. I never identified myself that way.
Right. So this is something that God supernaturally did. What impact, boast in the Lord, this is not you, boast in the Lord, what impact has your ministry now had on other people?
Yeah, well, that's the remarkable thing and totally and completely humbling, because when I have leaders now coming up to me asking me how I'm doing what I'm doing, all I can say is that it was God, because it was utterly and completely impossible for me. But in 2012, I stepped down as the lead pastor of Fire. And that year we gave, one of the focuses of Together for Israel is to provide for the saints in Israel based on Romans 15:27. Macedonia and Achaia were pleased to give an offering to the saints in Jerusalem. And one of the things I know that the Lord has called our ministry to is to be a conduit of funds for the needy believers in Israel, both Arab and Jew. So this is boasting in the Lord. In 2012, we gave more money than we've ever given before to believers in Israel. That year it was $18,000. And I thought, we'll never again give that much money.
Right, right.
The next year, 2013, we gave over $36,000. 2014, last year, we gave over $80,000. And I'm thinking to myself, how is this going to continue? Bro, we're not even totally halfway through this year, and already we've given over $80,000 to believers who are laboring in the land of Israel. And to me, I am boasting in the Lord. Let your boast be in the Lord, because only He can do it. I'm not a fundraiser. I'm not a slick salesman, but God has seen fit to just really bless and honor the work of our hands.
All right. I mean, it's amazing. It's amazing to hear that. It's amazing to hear what God has done. And that's just one tangible thing. We'll talk about this in a bit. Matt, let's grab clip number 5. This is from a phenomenal DVD recorded in the land of Israel on location with Avner Boesky, Micah Rodelnik, and yours truly, talking about the appointed times, the biblical calendar, and why it matters to the whole church. Clip number 5.
There are a total of 7 holidays based on a lunar calendar that follows the phases of the moon: the Feast of Passover, the Feast of Unleavened Bread, the Feast of First Fruits, the Feast of Pentecost, the Feast of Trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and the Feast of Tabernacles. According to the creation account in the book of Genesis, these sacred appointed times were in the mind of God from the very beginning.
Yeah, this is a wonderful DVD. It was many, many hours of filming on location in the land of Israel with incredible backdrops, incredible narratives, and it's all about the gospel. It's all about Jesus, ultimately. When you order the special family Bible, the Messianic Jewish Bible, the Tree of Life version, I think it's the most popular thing we've ever offered through this ministry. When you order that, it's a Bible to cherish for a lifetime. We'll give you the DVD, The Appointed Times, free, shot on location in the land of Israel. So go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Go there, and right on the homepage, you'll see the special resource offer. There's a video you can watch. I'll tell you more about the Bible, and I'll tell you more about the special DVD as well. You'll be blessed. Your family will be blessed. Your home Bible study will be blessed. Your church will be blessed. So take advantage of this. We'll be right back on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with my guest, Scott Volk.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
This is the land of the Bible, the nation of Israel, whose calendar reminds its people of the appointed times of the Lord, times of rest and remembrance, specific times that look back and times that point to the future.
That is from the Appointed Times DVD filmed on location in the land of Israel. I had the joy of participating with Michael Radelnik and Avner Boesky. Michael really knows the word well. He knows modern Israel's history really well. And he knows the land really well. When he does a tour, he'll tell the tour guide, hey, let me take it for a little while and give background. So he knows these things far better than I on the ground. But then Avner Boesky, even better, he'll say, this rock here, see, this rock tells you it's from this era, and see, this is a stone that the Romans used. And so it was such a joy to interact with them as the three of us talked about the biblical calendar and its significance for the whole body, the whole church. We're not talking about Gentiles living like Jews or Christians becoming Israelites and figure out which tribe they're from. We're talking about the significance of the biblical calendar for the whole body. This is Michael Brown. I am here in studio with my dear friend and colleague, Scott Volk. Hey, Scott, before we get back to Israel, you traveled with me for a number of years. You were my assistant and just undergirded so much of the ministry that we did. And we had some amazing experiences around the world. We saw God move in mighty ways. Some of the days you would fast when I'd be preaching and ministering, and it was a real joint effort. But we saw some amazing things happen. Anything stand out in your mind from our years of travel together, aside from the intensity of the schedule?
Yeah, I think two meetings in particular stand out. I'm sure you'll remember the one meeting in Dallas where I received a phone call from a Hispanic pastor before we were going to do a number of large meetings in Dallas. He pastored a small Hispanic church. I don't really know how small it was, but I didn't know when he called and asked. And I asked you, I said, bro, this guy is willing to have a midday service between your morning service at CFNI and your late night service somewhere else.
And we'd flown in from Houston. We're speaking at a mega church.
That's right.
There, and
it's a big,
heavy schedule.
Yeah. And so we ended up, a friend of mine drove us to this church. And as we walked in, they were singing some Brownsville songs in English, and they weren't even most of them didn't even speak English, but yeah. They spent hours, if not days, learning these songs in English to honor you as you came in. And the thing that stands out to me is that it was just a little nothing building, very, very small congregation, all Hispanic speaking. But they welcomed you as if the Lord himself was coming. They were so hungry for revival. And then you just spoke through an interpreter. You put your books on the back table. And at the end of the service, all they wanted you to do was to pray for them. And we prayed for them. And people were really getting touched by the Lord.
Yep.
I remember the pastor himself could not stand on his feet.
Yeah, I remember at the end when he went to greet me, I just went to hug him and bless him. He literally collapsed.
Yeah, collapsed.
So overwhelmed.
Collapsed.
We were so humbled.
Yeah.
We were so humbled by this little group, the exceptional love that they displayed.
That was one meeting. The kind of the cute thing that happened after that is I think we left our books on the table. We didn't even grab them because we needed to get out of there. But we got in the car, and before we pulled out of the parking lot, a couple of ushers were carrying the pastor outside so that he could reach his hand through the window. And thank you for coming. And that's one meeting that stands out to me. The other meeting that stands out to me was when we were in Italy together. It was the last night of just a brutal schedule where we were meeting three times a day, morning, noon, and night. It was the last night we were there, and the crowd was so thick that a policeman actually had to escort us out, not because you demanded security. It wasn't even a security measure, but there were so many people thronging us. We were getting an early morning flight the next day, and the policeman just had to come to escort us out. Again, not because it was anything that we demanded. He just saw that if he didn't help us, we would have been there all night. The hunger and the desire for God to move in their midst was so deep. So those would be the two meetings that I remember. I remember some humorous things, but I'll spare your listening audience those.
Yeah, and it's funny. When I think of some of the meetings, of course, I remember those, but then I think of some others. Remember in Prayer Mountain in Seoul, Korea, where Dr. Cho would preach, and they had the main pulpit, which no one ever spoke from but him, but they had me speak from the main pulpit.
Amazing.
And the people were so hungry, I went out and began to pray for them and literally got swarmed.
Yeah.
I literally got swarmed. They're talking about the watch being ripped off my arm. And they were just so desperate for prayer.
Yeah.
And, but remember, we were there. They had to stay there initially. And it was zonked. You know, we traveled all those hours and the time change. And 5 in the morning, you hear the bell ring.
Yeah.
And now next thing, hundreds, thousands of voices praying and crying out to God.
Yeah, I remember. That might have been the same trip. I don't know if it was the same trip. We were in Japan together when you called some of our then current students at BRSM, these amazing Japanese students. This place was
packed. That was a different trip. The Japan trip was in the midst of a trip from Italy to Japan to Singapore.
That's right.
And we had 48 hours
in
Japan, and I think we did 7 meetings, something like that. Yeah, that was a different one.
Yeah.
But and I still remember it was Japanese Airlines out of Zurich. And I just
you were definitely the tallest person.
I just had to do it, right? When it was, everyone was online, these Japanese, such precious people, but they're very slight.
Oh, yeah.
So I just said, bro, I just got to do it. I just stood on the line and just kind of smiled.
Yeah.
It was not long after that, we were at the airport in Atlanta.
Yep.
We were in Atlanta, and you look up, and my older daughter, Jen, was traveling with us. And you looked and said, that is one large man.
Yep.
It's a guy called the Big Show, the world's largest athlete.
Yeah.
And I thought, I got to catch up with this guy and see how big he is. So in Japan, I was the powerful big man of God.
Right.
When I saw him, I wanted to give him a track. and I finally catch up with him. And I thought, okay, I'm gonna give him a track. And I'm going to tell him, when I was a boy, my dad used to take me to see professional wrestling and so on. So I come up, you know, he's on the escalator. I say, excuse me, because he took up the whole escalator. He's 7 foot, 500 pounds.
Big.
He's a giant, you know? Everything, hands twice the size of my everything. And I was much heavier than I was, but I was like a tiny little guy next to him.
Yeah.
And Jen, my daughter, she's looking up, down, who's this massive?
Yeah.
So I'm about to tell him about Jesus, and I'm going to tell him, hey, I saw all the famous wrestlers of old. I thought that'd be a cool thing. But suddenly, I said, you know, when I was a boy, my dad used to take me to see professional. I mean, that's how
that's
I felt.
Right.
Can I give you this? It's a little story about me.
Yeah,
it would be so nice, Mr. Giant, if you would take it and read it. And he takes his giant paw, takes it. It's like, sorry, I won't bother you.
He was a big man.
But it's just everything's relative. I was the giant in Japan.
Yeah.
All right, so some personal reminiscing here. Friends, go to the website, make sure you check out our latest articles there, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Check out the latest articles, latest YouTube videos. We've always got something new for you there. And then check out the resource offer. We are listener supported, but one thing we try to do is have something special that will minister to you, edify you, bless you, and then a way that you can stand with us and help us in our outreach to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. Next time you hear my voice, friends, it will be from Israel. We're going to have some wonderful ministry time together. So go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Check out the special resource offer. I believe you'll be blessed, encouraged, edified, you and your family for years to come.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
That music from the Middle East signals it is Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. I'm here trying to do a radio broadcast, and Scott Volk is taking selfies, but that's okay.
I mean, if you were in the studio with Dr. Brown, wouldn't you take a selfie too?
My wife would say, who's he? Does it matter? As I've mentioned, the wonderful bride that God gave me. So you're married to an Arab, I'm married to a Jew. but the wonderful bride God gave me is totally unimpressed by human beings, in particular her husband. I was joking with folks the other day. I said, you know, if I said, honey, it's a miracle, I wrote this book in 3 weeks, you know what her response would be? Obviously, you weren't praying a lot. You spent all that time writing, you couldn't have been praying much.
Nancy's one of the best.
She is. She's amazing. All right. So, Scott, the appointed times, the feasts, the calendar— do you believe that we're all under the law, for example, that Gentile believers are required to keep a seventh-day Sabbath, that Gentile believers are required to observe the dietary laws, et cetera? Is that what you believe?
No, I don't believe that we're under the law to do that. I think, unfortunately, though, sometimes in the church they swung so far deeply to the other side of the pendulum that they think those things are absolutely irrelevant to them and have no meaning for them whatsoever, so they'll use the law as almost an excuse, or the way they view the law as an excuse, to have nothing to do with God's appointed times.
So since we can say that the Lord said these are his appointed times, you know, that language is used, and that the New Testament now ties them in with the cross and the gospel and the return of Jesus, first, why do you believe it's important for the whole church to recapture the biblical calendar? And then what kind of fruit do you see as Christians are doing this?
Yeah, well, first of all, when you look at the biblical calendar, I believe that that is really the Lord showing us exactly not only what he's done, but what he's going to do. So as you look at the feasts and you see the feasts that Jesus, Yeshua, has already fulfilled in his first coming, you can only imagine what those fall feasts indicate. It's really when he comes again. So as we understand what has happened and why God appointed these seasons, it really opens up our eyes to what he is desiring to do in history. Look, if he was born on a feast, if he died on a feast, if he rose on a feast, if he sent his spirit on a feast, what's he going to be doing when these fall feasts come? And you can probably even better articulate the feasts and what each of them means. But I am just deeply, deeply moved. The more I study and the more I learn, and even as God opens up my heart, so much of what he desires to do has been written. If only our eyes would be open to see the significance of what is written in the Word. It's remarkable.
And, you know, you mentioned him being born on the feast. Obviously, there's dispute about that. You know,
he wasn't born on Christmas, bro?
Well, I thought you meant Sukkot.
Oh.
There's debate about that. But certainly, you know, Messiah, our Passover lamb, sacrificed for us. He's the first fruits of those who slept. He sends the Spirit at Pentecost, Shavuot. He comes back with the blast of the trumpet. I mean, it's pretty clearly laid out. You know what it reminds me of? If you're watching some series of programs, you know, some serial drama, and someone dies off, you know, the person one of the characters dies, or they get killed some other way, you know, and you realize, okay, they're done. They've been scripted out. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it happens. The person can't do the show anymore, so you have to write something so they come to an end. But Israel hasn't been scripted out.
No, they haven't been
because the
out.
Calendar that spoke of the Messiah's death.
That's
the
right.
Same calendar that speaks of his return.
That's right.
So there's got to be continuity there.
That's right. Yeah, just even the terminology appointed times. These are times that God made appointments with us, an appointment to meet with his people. You know, I have, now that I'm 50, for whatever reason, I have braces. I get phone calls all the time from the orthodontist. Don't miss your appointment or else your mouth's going to get messed up. How about when God makes an appointment, and for believers to think that these appointed times are irrelevant just blows me away.
Yep. Friends, we will be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, if you're tapping your foot, you may not want to be tapping your foot while you're driving your car, but you could tap in your heart. Tap your finger. That's it. Tap your finger on the steering wheel. Welcome back to Thoroughly Jewish Thursday. Michael Brown with my dear friend and colleague, Scott Volk. Not taking calls today. Scott and I are in studio. And next time you hear my voice, it should be from Israel. Can't wait to go there and do some special ministry there over this weekend in the beginning of next week. So, Scott, you feel that it's important for the whole church to understand God's purposes for Israel. Now, do you believe that the whole body, it's important for the whole body to understand God's heart, say, for Mexican Indians?
No, although I do believe God may give a burden to a group of people for Mexican Indians, but I don't believe it's incumbent on the whole church to have that burden.
Do you believe it's incumbent on the entire church around the world to have a burden for the salvation of people who live in Mississippi?
Not necessarily. A burden for Mississippians at all.
Okay. So we should be praying for salvation of all people.
Absolutely.
Trying to reach all people.
Absolutely.
But you're saying that in a particular way, not just for a specific people group, right?
Mm-hmm.
In other words, a missionary comes to our church, he's tremendously burdened to go to India, right? We support and help him, but I don't have a burden for India, but I'll support him and pray for him.
Right.
Hey, I've got a burden for inner city Chicago. Great, we're going to help finance you to get there, but boy, I don't feel called to do that. You know, I feel a different calling. But yet you feel that the entire church, on some level, should have a heart for Israel. What do you mean by a heart for Israel?
What I mean by a heart for Israel is that we need to be embracing the things that God embraces. I do believe that God embraces the salvation of all people. The word says that God so loved the world that he sent his son. It's God didn't so love Israel or the Jewish people. He loved the world. So God's heart is that none would perish. But there's a particular calling that God has where Israel is concerned. And I think if the church grabs hold of it, we're grabbing hold of something ultimate. And the longer we're either ambivalent, naive, or reject God's heart for Israel, I believe that we're missing the ultimate purpose for our own salvation.
Explain.
Okay, so in the book of Romans, God says salvation has come to the nations to provoke Israel to jealousy. Provoking Israel to what? If Israel was so important, why are so many believers naive about God's calling for Israel? I believe that when we grab hold of God's heart for Israel, we're grabbing hold of not only God's heart for Israel, but also God's heart for the nations, because Jesus himself said he will not return until Jerusalem welcomes him back. The longer that the church is naive or blinded or ignorant, as Paul says, with regard to Israel, the longer the church stays in the backdrop of entering into all that God has in for the church. Jesus didn't come so that we can have church services. Jesus came and the people of Israel rejected him. Salvation now has come to the nations. If you're not a Jewish believer in Jesus, you're from the nations. You have a debt to pay to Israel. And that debt is just to embrace what the Lord's heart is. I mean, throughout scripture, I believe that God loves the people from Mississippi, and I believe that God loves the people from Timbuktu, but there's no other people's group that God talks about like he talks about Israel.
Isn't that like showing favoritism or something like that?
Yeah, from a human perspective, it is showing favoritism. How about when Jesus, you know, comes and says, I've come only for the lost sheep of the house of Israel? Or when Paul says, or Jesus says, salvation is of the Jews. That seems very ethnocentric. However, when people really understand God's heart for Israel and God's heart for the world, I believe then that we can truly, when we truly have God's heart for Israel, we'll truly have God's heart for the nations.
Yeah.
They're totally intertwined together.
You know, the other thing is it's been very costly to be chosen.
Yeah.
There's the Jewish joke, why not choose someone else?
Yeah.
You know, Prime Minister Netanyahu's pointed this out. I've mentioned it many times, but the people of India, that's over a billion people today. People of China, yeah. over a billion people. Mm-hmm. And their history is as ancient as the history of Israel.
Right.
And they're, 13, 14 million Jews
Amazing.
In the world today. I mean, there may be others that we haven't identified as Jews, mm-hmm. you know, lost tribes and mm-hmm. people like that are discovered or brought back to the land of Israel. But you're talking about a remnant that yeah. survived. It's been very costly to be called.
Yeah, absolutely.
And to me, the whole emphasis is God keeps his promise.
That's the bottom line.
You know, that's the big thing to me. Can we trust God to keep his promise? What if I said, look, God did keep his promise, but because Israel was unworthy, he transferred the promises to someone else. Mm. Isn't he just as faithful if he does that?
Well, when you look at Romans 9, 10, and 11, and Paul asks the question, has God forsaken Israel over and over? It's no, God forbid. And that's because God keeps his covenant and keeps his promises to 1,000 generations. If he's going to make a promise to Abraham, a unilateral, unconditional, forever promise, then he's not going to go back on it. I think the people who say that God would go back on his promise because Israel rejected God probably don't even hold their own words as important to them. They may be the very ones who would go back on their promise to somebody else, but God keeps covenant and shows mercy to 1,000 generations.
Yeah, and when he made the covenant with Abram in Genesis 15, he was the only one that passed through the covenantal piece of saying, yeah. it's on me.
Yeah, that's...
It's on me.
And I think he did that because he knew if Abraham walked through those covenantal pieces with him, Abraham would have failed. He simply would have failed. So God was saying...
And we saw what happened with the Sinai covenant with his perpetual failure.
Exactly.
And Paul reminds us in Galatians 3 that the law, which is before the promise...
That's right.
The promise, which is before the
that's
law,
right.
can't be annulled
Absolutely.
By the law that comes after. So if I say, Scott Volk, I hereby promise to you and your descendants, all the Volk family, this, mm-hmm. this, no matter what you do, and then you displease me, and I turn to someone else, say, you are now the Volk family.
Right, right.
Then obviously, haven't kept my word. Hey, I just want to take a break for one moment and play a clip for you, an extended clip from the DVD, The Appointed Times, filmed on location in Israel. Long days, long drives to get to special places, let alone flying over there. A whole crew from the day of discovery, and some just tremendous footage produced, instructive, eye-opening. I learned stuff just being in certain locations there in Israel as we talked about the feast and the appointed times.
You know what's interesting is that even in homes that are not very religious, Jewish homes, these are still things people get involved with. This is a time when Jewish people get more religious, the Passover Seder, the meal. This is a communal thing in families across the world. When you get to Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement, you have even irreligious Jews who are fasting. And then in the religious community, everything stops. Normal life stops. I remember living in Maryland near an Orthodox Jewish bookstore, and in the days leading up to the fall holy days, they would have stacks of books on repentance because everyone's examining their life. So the life cycle of Israel really revolves around these things, even to this day, even for secular Jews.
Scott, what's happened when you have done Passover Seders, so the Passover meal for churches, and explained the messianic significance of that?
Yeah, the remarkable thing is that most people would say, I never, ever knew this, that what the church today calls communion was actually the Passover Seder.
Yeah.
Is so utterly enlightening when Yeshua picked up the bread and said, this is my body. And when he picked up the cup, which is really the cup of redemption in the Passover meal, eyes are open to how the Lord fulfilled the Feast of Passover. It's one of my favorite things to do. I have the privilege of doing multiple Passover Seders a year in churches. I love doing that.
And are you saying that it enhances people's appreciation of Jesus? Doesn't this Jewish stuff take people away from Jesus and get them looking at other stuff?
Yeah, I think for the less mature people who are soulishly connected to the Jewish things, yes, it will pull them away. But when we have God as central and God as our focus, it only really enhances and opens up our eyes to the fullness of all that God has. Does God enjoy and love when his children have a fuller understanding and revelation of who he is? Absolutely. And in these appointed times, in these feasts, when people really grab hold to the meaning of them, I believe their lives are changed forever.
Yeah, and when we come back, I'll tell you how you can get hold of this DVD, wonderful, beautiful DVD. You'll be getting it free with a Messianic Bible this week as well. And Scott, we've just got a few seconds before the break, but when's your next trip to Israel, your next tour that you're leading?
I'm actually going on Sunday, a week from, less than a week, just a couple of days after the show airs.
And you're leading a tour?
I am going to be leading a small tour, but my Together for Israel tour will be in November, and I'd love for any of your listeners to join us. Website, togetherforisrael.org.
F-O-R-4. Togetherforisrael.org. All right, check the website out. And if you say, hey, I want to get involved with Israel one way or another, I don't know how, go there to the website, togetherforisrael.org. We'll be right back on Thoroughly Jewish Thursday with my thoroughly Jewish guest and thoroughly Jewish friend, Mr. Scott Bolt.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Standing here on the Mount of Olives, we're looking over the Kidron or Jehoshaphat Valley toward the Temple Mount. 2,000 years ago, this is where the temple stood in Jesus' day. Today you have the Golden Dome, the Dome of the Rock. But going back to the time of Jesus, this was the mountain where the focus was on the feast, the focal point of God's festivals.
That is the voice of Avner Boski, and he is... there, I mean, we were on location. I mean, we had some heavy travel days, a lot of hot sun, and just in some amazing settings. Scott, have you ever seen this video?
I have seen this video, and I highly recommend it.
Yeah, really, really well done. But what you can do, it's a $20 DVD on location in the land of Israel about the Feast of Israel, the biblical calendar, its significance for today. But when you order the Messianic Jewish Family Bible, beautifully embossed with Hebrew on the outside, beautifully produced on the inside, meant to last a lifetime, featuring the Tree of Life version. So this is the first ever of its kind with a team of scholars, Messianic Jewish Christian scholars, Messianic Jewish leaders, theologians, Yeshua ben Elohim. You read it and that feels a little different. Jesus, the Son of God, his mother Miriam, disciples with names like Yaakov and things like that, Jacob. It's really an eye-opener when you read it, but it's very readable. It's a great, lively translation as well. And we got amazing responses to these beautiful Bibles. When you order them, we'll be giving you the DVD with it. You can call 1-800-278-9978 to order, 1-800-278-9978 to order, or you can go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and click right on the homepage to find out more. Scott, as you and I went to Israel last year, you organized the tour, put things together, and I was able to be with everyone sometimes for the whole day or sometimes at different locations and do a little teaching or have meals together. And then you were with folks through the day with our great tour guide and you know, all kinds of special things, going to a home for kids that are really deprived and don't have much, and spending time with them and able to make contributions to them, and behind the scenes with Israeli military and seeing how they do things. Just an amazing tour, great tour guide we had. But before going, I wanted to do it. We talked about me leading a tour with your help, and I finally agreed to do it after years and years of saying no. And what was the cost on average is about what?
The cost for people coming?
Yeah.
Probably around $3,500.
Yeah. So, I mean, I pushed it on the radio, but not that aggressively.
Uh-huh.
Because I had not personally led a tour mm-hmm. before. I go there just to minister. And I thought, it's a lot of money. I know it's a good deal. It's a lot of money. First, when I went there, I was shocked at how much they got for the money.
Oh, they get a lot for the money.
I was shocked by the whole tour, the quality of the hotels we stayed at, the quality of the food.
All the falafel you can eat.
No, I mean, it was literally.
It was good, yeah.
I was stunned by that. Mm-hmm. But I was more stunned. As much as I knew it, I still didn't realize how much people would be impacted.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like the word came alive to them, and just so many things happened.
Yeah.
You've been doing this for years. How many tours do you think you've led?
I think this one next week will be my 18th tour. It's crazy. By the time I lead my own tour in November, it'll be 20.
All right. So what kind of impact do you hear?
Oh, my goodness. I can't remember one negative feedback that I received. Most of the impact is it changed my life. You know, a lot of people like to say before they went to their HD TV or their plasma TV, they never really enjoyed watching TV until the TV just lit up. Going to Israel is almost like getting this new TV. When you read the Bible, you're reading it through the lenses of having been there. Israel is not that big. It's amazing. Just the few square miles that the Bible even encompasses, that Yeshua even spent his life on, and we're able to navigate through there. So people say they read their Bibles differently. It comes to life. People say they have a heart now for Israel. And amazingly, and something that I'm really blessed by, a heart for the surrounding Arab nations as well.
Yes. And of course, that's just going to come naturally on the trip. It's not a Palestinian bashing trip.
No, absolutely not.
I tell people, have a heart for Israel, you'll have a heart for the Palestinians
as
well.
That's exactly right.
And the other thing is, you know, when you actually go to places where something really happened there, it makes you realize how real the Bible is. I don't mean that it comes alive like, wow, now I see this, or about being on the Sea of Galilee.
Right.
You know, I can now picture this better. As much as it really happened.
It really happened.
One of my friends is involved with a major search for Noah's Ark, and they brought back video footage from Turkey that was absolutely devastating to see. I mean, it encased in ice, but what really looks like this massive boat. It's pretty overwhelming. Now, I don't know whether it's it or not, but when I saw it, I realized it really happened. Mm. Whether that's it or not, there really was a flood. Yeah. It really happened. So we're there on Mount Carmel, where Elijah calls down fire from heaven, and we're looking out at Armageddon.
That's
you realize it really happened. It's
and
really
it's
gonna happen.
It's going to happen, right? Phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal. Lives are changed when they see this. We actually had on a tour that my friend was on. This gal joined us because her friend from another church here in town was there, an unsaved Jewish gal. And bro, we were up on the Mount of Olives and we were overlooking the Eastern Gate in the old city of Jerusalem. And I just felt like the Lord gave me this word about Jesus weeping over the city. So here this unsaved Jewish gal on our trip hears that the Messiah is weeping over the city because his people rejected him. Mm. This gal goes to her friend who was on the tour with us saying, is he saying that if I receive the Messiah, he won't weep anymore? I mean, it was one of these phenomenal kinds of things. So here you are in the land of the Bible, and God opens hearts. He opens eyes. That's why this is something, although it's not the primary thing that we do, it's something that I'm going to continue doing because I love seeing lives changed.
Yeah, and friends, again, I'm an eyewitness to it. If I'm able to do another tour in the future with Scott, you better believe I'll push it more aggressively because, I mean, I knew it would be good. I knew it would be worthwhile. I knew it would be a good deal. But I was stunned on all accounts. And everybody goes with high expectations, and they say it was met above and beyond
the
expectations. There's just something about it, and it's very supernatural. Again, if you'd like to go on a tour with Scott, the next major tour he'll be leading is in November. So there's time now. There's still plenty of time, but you got to take steps now. Together for Israel. It's F-O-R, togetherforisrael.org. And if you want to stand with impoverished believers in Israel, including needy Arabs as well, it is also a great place to go and sow seed. Hey, Scott, always a joy. Thanks for
coming in and chatting today. It's a pleasure.
All right, friends, I am just about out of time. Please visit the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org. Somehow, if you're not connected with us on Facebook or Twitter or YouTube channel, connect via the website. Check out my latest articles and YouTube videos. And by all means, take advantage of this week's special resource offer. You'll be blessed, and your family will be blessed by the Messianic Jewish Family Bible, Tree of Life version, and the free DVD on the appointed times. My bottom line today, we're not being sectarian, narrow-minded, or bigoted by saying that God has chosen Israel for his eternal purposes, and that choosing has not been rescinded.